You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz. And each week we come to you with topics that doctors discuss between themselves on every topic imaginable in healthcare. And we let you in on those private conversations so you'll be armed with the information that you'll need to fight for your healthcare freedom. Our show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a non-for-profit, tax-deductible organization founded by doctors deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in. The foundation offers solutions that are very different than those enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do about the kind of healthcare you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. So get a pen, get paper. Please write down the website, docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's docs for the number four, patientcarefoundation.org. Make a generous contribution so we can continue to bring you this great radio show that we bring each week to you and continue to do the work that we're doing. We have a drive going on right now. We have a challenge grant that needs to be met, so we need your help. So please give a generous donation today to the foundation. Before we get started with our show, I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment to acknowledge a somber event. One of the good friends of Docs for Patient Care, somebody who we had on this show not long ago, and someone, if you're listening to the show on a regular basis, you hear actually doing one of the radio commercials, Dr. Jeff Terry, pediatric urologist in Mobile, Alabama, and a staunch fighter for healthcare freedom, suddenly passed away last month. And Dr. Terry was probably the single most important figure out there who was fighting against this massive implementation of ICD-10, which is the new coding system that the government is implementing, that they're forcing upon the medical community, which is burdensome and will have effects that are far-reaching and will unfortunately affect and impact every person who's in America, because it will influence how doctors' workflow is and the flow of funds coming in, and whether or not doctors are going to get paid for the work that they do, and that will impact patients. And Dr. Terry was the person who fought against this and was instrumental in making sure that that there was a grace period of a year when this law goes into effect, this change goes into effect October 1st. So I would just like to take a moment, remember Dr. Terry, and acknowledge the incredible contributions that he made, and just mention that I, for one, and I know that all my colleagues who know him and knew of his work will miss him. Well, we're going to launch into our show this morning. In case you missed it, there's a presidential campaign going on, and people who know me and who know what a political geek I am and how interested I am in politics regularly come up to me and ask who my choice for 2016 is going to be. I was the national co-chair in 2012 for Physicians for Romney, and I was very involved in the healthcare battles back then and before, and people want me to help opine about who would be the best person for healthcare, and that got me thinking about this subject and who's talking about it and what they're saying. And wouldn't you know it, you know, great minds think alike, and our good friend of Docs for Patient Care and of this show, Sally Pipes, the president and the CEO of Pacific Research Institute, was having the identical thought just as I was, and she did something about it. She wrote about it in this week's Forbes Online, and she wrote an article about the GOP presidential field and what their positions are and what they thought. And so we're going to jump into that today and talk a little bit about presidential politics on health care. Sally, good morning.
Good morning, Hal. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you. It's I know it's early on the left coast, and we really appreciate us Easterners appreciate you West Coasters who are willing to get up early and help make our show successful.
Well, it's amazing to me, and I don't know, you probably think so too, that here we are, it's only September the 10th of 2015, and we're already in full election mode, you know, a year and 2 months before the November 2016 election takes place. It's a very, very early beginning to the presidential debate.
Well, you know, it's very telling that people are concerned about the events going on. They're upset about different areas. Healthcare, interestingly, I'm surprised is not getting more airtime. And just this morning on the way into the show, I was listening to talk radio as I often do, and the host of this show got a listener who's a doctor who was saying, you know, healthcare really needs to be looked at again. And the host said, well, what can the government do to free things up? Or what can the government do to fix the problem? And my God, everybody is missing the boat. And I don't think that we're doing maybe as good a job as we would like to be doing about explaining to the public about what's possible and what's happened, what's possible, and how we really can undo so much bad that's been done.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm absolutely amazed. In the first debate, I think 2 minutes were devoted to healthcare in the sort of what I call the main draw of the August 6th debate that Fox hosted. And we have another debate coming up for the GOP candidates on September 16th at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, hosted by CNN. And I'm just wondering, you know, what role healthcare is going to play in that debate, because I really think healthcare should be the number one domestic policy issue that this country is facing on, because, Hal, as you know, I mean, on March 23rd, 2010, the president signed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act into law. It's over 5 years old, 5.5 years old now, and the American people don't like it. And our candidates on the GOP side should be really making the case for why this law needs to be repealed and replaced, because it's not bringing out what the president promised us, affordable, accessible, quality care. It's not reducing the number of uninsured. The number has come down a bit because of adding people onto Medicaid, the program for low-income Americans. Those people are finding it difficult to get a doctor, long waiting lists. They're increasing the use of emergency rooms, as the president wanted to get away from, and the cost of health care has gone up under the government, sort of the federal government getting more and more involved in our health care system.
Well, let me remind our listeners about health care as a political issue, and I'm wondering why we're not hearing more about it. Is it because other issues like Iran, the border crisis that Donald Trump brings up, the Syrian refugee crisis, the Chinese economic free fall affecting our stock market, are all of these issues crowding out health care, Sally Pipes?
Well, I think, yeah, they definitely are. But the other thing is that healthcare, as you know, Hal, is a very complicated subject. And a lot of people in politics are afraid of discussing it. They're afraid that they might have to get into the weeds. They don't really understand it. And that's why what Docs for Patient Care is doing is so important, because you are educating doctors and the public at large on why this massive 2,700-page law is, you know, hurting people through, you know, increased premiums, smaller networks of doctors and hospitals. Now we're seeing amalgamations in the insurance industry, Anthem taking over Cigna, Aetna taking over Humana. You know, we're going to have just probably three large insurers, which, contrary to what people in the industry are saying will lead to lower prices and more competition and better coverage. It's exactly the opposite. In economics, we know that, you know, three large insurers will lead to less competition, higher premiums, as we saw in some of the earlier mergers with United Healthcare and with Aetna. So, you know, there's a lot going on, but I think a lot of politicians are just afraid of, you know, getting into this, and they're afraid, you know, remember back in 2010 when the Tea Party movement was in its heyday, I mean, that really made a big impact. They really educated a lot of people on what was happening to their health care. In the 2012 election, as you know, you worked with Governor Romney on his policy team. That, you know, health care didn't really come into being. I don't think he wanted to really get into the weeds of it because he had brought in Romney Care into Massachusetts. So Donald Trump, of course, you know, is number one in the GOP polls right now in the presidential field. And, you know, it's very worrying that he came out and said, you know, that he, you know, 15 years ago he supported single payer. You know, he's, it works great in Canada. It works so well in Scotland. I mean, he doesn't have any understanding of what it means when government runs the healthcare system. And we've got to, our job, Hal, is to educate the American people to bring this issue back into the fold so that we can, you know, elect a president and a Congress that really will focus on repeal and replacement of Obamacare.
Well, you brought up Donald Trump and how uninformed he is, despite the fact that his ego would speak otherwise. He believes that he is the smartest guy in the room always on every subject, healthcare included. But let's look at the field that we've got right now. It's very interesting. If you looked at the top 10 people in the presidential field, you've got two doctors, you've got two business leaders, you've got four governors, and you've got, I'm double counting now, you've got three senators, but because I'm counting Rand Paul twice as a doctor and as a
right.
senator. And it's very interesting that every one of those people should know about health care, right? The doctors lived it, and they delivered health care. The business leaders purchased it on a large scale. The governors administered it, and the senators regulated it. And it's just unbelievable how little they actually really know about it. And that is, I think, evidenced by the fact that nobody really has a comprehensive idea for healthcare. They have, bits and pieces and piecemeal kind of ideas, but nothing that really truly addresses some of the problems. And you've written about who you believe is the candidate who has the best grasp so far on healthcare this week in your Forbes article.
Right, I did. Governor Walker of Wisconsin, and my Forbes article was called Walker Trumps the GOP Presidential Field in Healthcare Reform. And funnily enough, I had an email yesterday from someone on the Jindal campaign saying, well, you know, why aren't you talking about Bobby Jindal's plan? There are really three of the contenders who've actually said, you know, have come up with a plan for reform of the Affordable Care Act, one being Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin, who I think has the very best plan out there, has the best understanding of what the Affordable Care Act is doing to our health care system. Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, had an op-ed in Politico about a month ago, and he has some of the basic ideas that Governor Walker has. He hasn't really fleshed them out that carefully. And then, of course, Governor Jindal of Louisiana has a plan that he brought out a few months ago. But the rest of them are sort of sitting around the edges.
Right. And we're going to get further into the presidential field and their ideas when we return to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my special guest, Sally Pipes. We are talking about the GOP presidential campaign and health care. And Sally, we went to the break talking about the three candidates who have come out with somewhat credible health care plans, and you've mentioned them. It was Governors Walker, Senator Rubio, and Governor Jindal. But Governor Jindal is polling at under 2%, so maybe that's why nobody's talking about him.
Right, exactly. Governor Walker in Wisconsin won election as governor once. He had a recall election to fight. Everybody said he couldn't win again. He did, and then he won re-election in 2014. I mean, he runs a state that is a very liberal state. He has a lot of problems. He did right to work. He understands the problems with Medicaid and why it shouldn't be expanded under the Affordable Care Act. He really gets it, and yet he is polling at about 4%. I find it astounding, and I think it's because, as I say, Donald Trump has trumped the air out of all of the other candidates, and the media is focusing pretty much fully on what Donald Trump has to say, and he changes his mind, you know, on his beliefs, you know, every other day. One day he believes this, the next day he believes that. But most of his media attention has come on the whole immigration issue, which you made reference to a couple of minutes ago. So, you know, it's very discouraging. But I just can't believe that Donald Trump will end up being the Republican candidate, and the wind has to come out of that balloon soon. And I think then the American people and the people that are involved in the Republican Party will see that someone like Governor Walker, Senator Rubio, Carly Fiorina, I think, you know, who was formerly head of Hewlett-Packard, who lost that Senate race in California against Barbara Boxer 5 years ago, she is coming out really strong with some good views. I haven't heard her talk on health care, but I think she would probably be more in the Walker camp.
Tell everyone why it is that you think Walker has the best handle on health care, Sally.
Well, I think, you know, his plan, which he released a couple of weeks ago, really, you know, looks at, you know, repeal and replacement of Obamacare. And what we need to do is, as I said earlier, if we get a Republican president, he has to have a strong backbone. We have to have control of the House and Senate. And then early in 2017, you know, after the inauguration on January 20th, healthcare reform, repealing Obamacare and replacing it with an agenda has to be front and center. And so he brought out a plan that I think it's detailed. It's really the first serious plan from a GOP candidate. And he focuses on free market ideas that will increase competition, lower prices and costs, and expand coverage and reform existing entitlement plans, i.e. like Medicare and Medicaid. So his plan is called the Day One Patient Freedom Plan, which I think is, you know, it's a really good name for a plan because if the person who becomes the president doesn't deal with health care right away, as you know, Hal, it'll slip along and then, oh, well, maybe we'll make a tweak here, we'll make a tweak there. Governor Walker realizes a tweak to Obamacare here and a tweak there will end up with Obamacare light, and then as time goes on, we'll move more and more into Obamacare heavy, and then the insurers won't be able to survive, even though they think merging will help them. And we will be on the path to a single-payer Medicare for all system. So Governor Walker, wants to get rid of Obamacare. He supports refundable tax credits for individuals who are buying insurance in the individual market. He wants to make it simple and fair, and it would be an age-based refundable tax credit rather than an income program such as Obamacare provides under the subsidies and under Obamacare. So every child under 18 would receive $900. Adults up to age 34 would get $1,200. Those between 35 and 49 would receive $2,100, and $3,000 would go to those age 50 to 64. So it's a really good deal for middle-class families who get nothing from Obamacare but higher premiums, higher deductibles, and these smaller networks of doctors and hospitals. So he supports age-based refundable tax credits. He supports allowing those people who have pre-existing conditions to continue with coverage if they maintain their coverage on a continuous basis. He would also encourage, and I really believe we have to do something, because this was one of the problems with healthcare before, is, you know, how do you deal with people with chronic or pre-existing conditions? Because if they lose their employer-based coverage, it can be very expensive or even impossible to get coverage. So he wants to beef up the state-based high-risk pools with federal funds so that these people can get coverage until we get a properly functioning market. So, and he is a big supporter of health savings accounts, which I am as well. These are the savings accounts where people can save money tax-free by putting the funds every month into a tax-free account, combining it with a high-deductible plan to cover emergencies or medical catastrophes. That's what you want coverage for. You know, today we have what you call first-dollar coverage. People who have 60% of Americans have employer-based coverage, and they have no idea what health care costs, but they go to the doctor because they know they have coverage, and this pushes the cost of health care up. So he's a big supporter of HSAs. He believes consumers should be able to purchase coverage across state lines. So a young man living in Atlanta may, you know, want a very basic policy, and he can't find it, get it in Atlanta because of all the mandates that insurance companies are faced with. He may be able to find it in Arizona or Nevada, but right now that doesn't work. So Governor Walker supports that. And I think one of the big things is that he really is concerned about Medicaid, the program for low-income Americans, which now has grown under Obamacare from 50 million to 71 million Americans. So he has a very strong plan, a plan that would put consumers, doctors, back in charge of healthcare. It would be empowering rather than the federal government, which is slowly and taking over our healthcare system.
Sally, I don't know if you've considered the fact that there are some other people who came out with comprehensive plans. You know, you mentioned Rubio just a bit ago, and Rubio actually is the only person who highlights healthcare on their official website for president. Everybody else has ignored it. But Cruz was one of the three senators, along with Senator John Barrasso, who's an orthopedic surgeon. They were those three senators came up with the Senate alternative to Obamacare. If the Supreme Court would have struck down health care under King Burwell, the case that unfortunately went in favor of the government, but Cruz also had actually legislative ready language to step in and fix things should that have gone south.
Right, and also budget director and chairman of the House Budget Committee, Dr. Tom Price, who is also a medical doctor. He has a very, very good plan as well, somewhat similar to the Walker plan. But unfortunately, you know, in June, I had been very optimistic that the U.S. Supreme Court would overturn the King v. would overturn the Obamacare through King v. Burwell. Unfortunately, Chief Justice John Roberts went with the majority, wrote the majority opinion, saying that the subsidies being paid to individuals who were enrolled in an insurance exchange through the federal government, healthcare.gov, those people in those 34 states, which under Obamacare, it was really illegal. The subsidies were only to be available to those people who were enrolled in an exchange established by the state, i.e. covered California, cover Oregon, you know, 14 states in D.C. set up their own exchanges. But unfortunately, the government thought, and the president thought, all states would set up their exchanges. Unfortunately, our side lost that case, and I think I'm very disappointed in it. I think a number of Republicans, I think, were kind of like, phew, I'm glad the case went down, because they were worried about, would they extend the subsidies, what would it do to their bids for re-election or their presidential bid. But, you know, now we're seeing, as a result of that bad decision, from my point of view, these insurance companies consolidating. They want to increase the people they cover, but they're not going. It's not going to help patients. It's not going to help doctors. Then we're seeing the president going around to various states that didn't expand their Medicaid programs for low-income Americans, saying you should expand your Medicaid program. And if they do, we've seen Utah, Alaska, some of the states with Republican governors. You know, they will expand their Medicaid program to get more funding. Then that funding drops off, the federal payment on it, and then what will happen is the state will say, we're in a financial mess, we can't afford this. And, you know, if President Obama, if this happens when he's still president, he'll say, well, let's take Medicaid over and put it all under the federal government, like Medicare, the program for seniors. And so then you'll have that section, Medicaid, CHIP, Medicare will all be under government, and it's really a frightening thought. So I was very disappointed in those Republicans that were really supporting extending subsidies once the King v. Burwell decision went our way, but it didn't. And so, unfortunately, people like Senator Ted Cruz, who is very committed to repeal and replacement of Obamacare, you know, had said and had brought out in his plan.
But, Sally, who in the GOP field isn't for repealing Obamacare? Have you heard of any of the candidates who are against that?
Well, they, you know, everybody says they're for, they all say they're for repeal and replace, but there are variations on repeal and replace. Are we going to repeal parts of it? Are we going to repeal the employer mandate, the individual mandate? Are we going to appeal, you know, the 10% tanning tax? Are we going to repeal the medical device tax? Nobody, you know, this was a big issue when King v. Burwell was, you know, in play before the court made their decision in June. I don't really know. I do know that Governor Walker supports full repeal and replace, definitely Senator Rubio, Governor Jindal, you know, some of these people, they're afraid to put out
a plan,
put out what they really believe is in their plan. And
yeah.
And so it's that really,
that's the frustrating part.
That is very discouraging.
It is. Well, you know, we are coming up on the hard break, but, you know, I wanted to, on the next segment, I'm going to talk about, remind the audience about the Docs for Patient Care Foundation prescription for health care reform, and which one of the people in Congress received it, and how they applied it to their own ideas about health care reform. So we'll come back and talk about that in the next segment in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schertz, with my guest, Sally Pipes. We're talking about the GOP presidential race and health care. And I want to remind everyone who's out there about the Docs for Patient Care Foundation prescription. So, look, we really hope that you'll help support the organization and donate, but just go to the website and go and read the prescription for healthcare reform if you've not done that already. It has everything on there that needs to happen in healthcare, and we've talked about this incessantly since we released this in 2010. We've modified it a little bit, but it's basically the same framework. And the things that we've said back then are as true today as they were then. And all the prescription, all the predictions, all the things that we've written about regarding healthcare, every single thing has come true. Because we're doctors who live this. We understand the policy. We understand the politics. And we really understand what has to happen to make healthcare work for every American, and unfortunately, that's a big problem with people in the Washington class. And we've put in the hands of Drs. Carson and Dr. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, Senators Cruz and Rubio, our prescriptions. And it's very interesting, Sally. I want to share like this anecdote. You know about the repeal of the sustainable growth rate, the SGR repeal, the doc fix. And the doc fix was a 260-page document that very, very few people in Congress read but voted for because it was pushed through by leadership. And two of the people that we have contact with, Senator Cruz, Senator Rubio, who have the Docs for Patient Care prescription, and with whom we have doctors who have personal connections with them in our organization, we explained to them that the rhetoric that they use on the campaign trail, especially Senator Cruz, that on day one he's going to repeal every single word of Obamacare. And we told him, you know what, Senator, if you vote for the doc fix, you're either deluding yourself that you're going to do that on day one, or you're lying to the constituency. Because if you vote for that, the other 240 pages of the doc fix of the SGR repeal are ways to change how doctors are paid and what they need to do to comply with Obamacare. So that it was further ingraining Obamacare into the fabric of healthcare, and we explained that to them, that if they voted for this law, that they could not, with a clear conscience, say that they're going to repeal Obamacare, because it will be impossible. It's difficult enough as it is before that was passed because of all the changes that you've pointed out with insurance company mergers and, you know, the consolidation of the industry and other artificial means of changing healthcare. But with this, these new payment reforms and new ways that physicians have to comply to Obamacare to get paid, They couldn't vote for this and be able to say they're going to repeal Obamacare. And guess what? Neither Cruz nor Rubio voted for it.
Well, that's good because I think, you know, there was so much media leading up to the vote on this. This was the repeal of the sustainable growth rate and the doc fix, which had been done, I think, 17 times to keep doctors being paid for those patients who are on Medicare, our senior population of people 65 and over. But, you know, doctors are going to get, as I say, screwed in a couple of years. I mean, their payments will go up for a couple of years, then they go on hold, and then their payments will be tied to, you know, quality-based care based upon who makes the decision on whether they're giving their patients quality care or the patients being readmitted to hospital, all of these controls by government, which I think, you know, a lot of doctors probably didn't realize, and it's not a good doc fix and the repeal of the SGR are not good for doctors in the future of medicine and for our senior population.
Or for any patients for that matter. It's bad for everybody. And when things are bad for the physician community, it's not that we're talking about that they're, you know, going to have to downsize from, you know, a Mercedes to a BMW. We're talking about the fact that they are going to be unable to deliver the quality healthcare that they have done for generations, that they've delivered for generations, because there is someone basically handcuffing them from Washington, preventing them from delivering that kind of care.
And it's already starting how, you know, on the Medicare population, because one in three new Medicare-eligible patients is having a hard time finding a doctor even now because of the low reimbursement rates and full practices. When docs are paid, you know, 20% below what they get for treating a patient with private coverage, they're cutting out taking on new Medicare patients. And, you know, I'm part of the baby boom generation. We're a huge bubble that is going to be entering, you know, that program at some point. And, what does it mean when you can't find a doctor who's going to treat you? So, you know, I mean, one of the things is that, you know, when people like Governor Walker say that people should be able to put, you know, the money that they save on the refundable tax credit, age-based refundable tax credit, into their HSA health savings accounts, that's a great idea. But HSAs should be not cut off for people when they join Medicare. People, you know, a lot of people can afford health coverage. They don't want to be in a government program, and they should be able to include and continue with a health savings account, which puts the doctor and patient in charge of your health care.
Let me put the issues on the table. You know, I'm concerned that there may not be a good enough understanding in the presidential field, and it's probably because the people who are advising them are uninformed about what the real issues are. You know, the issues aren't really Obamacare. The Obamacare just made a bad situation, you know, probably 1,000 times worse. But the issues are there's no free competition, there is overregulation, there is less choice because of Obamacare. There's no price transparency. There are tax implications, and so the solutions are to free up the marketplace, not to have the government step in and do more to change things. You want to actually have the government step away and allow the marketplace to fix itself. You mentioned earlier about when the market fixes itself. Right now, you said earlier, Sally, you pointed out about the three insurance companies, and so when we talk about people being able to go out and purchase health care across state lines, it really is, it's almost that train almost left the station because there is no choice anymore because all the insurance companies have disappeared, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, under Obamacare, some states allowed the setting up of these co-ops, but you know what? Most of them have failed. They've gone under. And so, the more we consolidate the market, you know, the less competition there will be. The premiums will be up, deductibles will be up. You know, a lot of middle class people when they now find that, you know, under, if they bought a plan on their state-based exchange or healthcare.gov, not only do they not have, you know, you don't, as you know, Hal, you don't go to the doctor every day. It's not like you go to Starbucks where you get your coffee every day. You only go to the doctor when you want a checkup or you have some kind of a problem. So it's taking a while for people to realize when they call up their doctor and then the doctor says, well, do you have, the assistant says, do you have coverage? Oh, yes, I have the, you know, silver plan with blue shield. And then they say, well, we're not in that network, so, you know, you won't be covered. Or the hospital that you, you know, has gone to have your children and all that, that hospital is not part of network. So these things are coming to the fore for the American people, and they're finding out that, you know, the premiums are too high. The deductible, if you have a $5,000 deductible, you're a middle-class family. You're not saving very much money a month at all if you pay for your basic necessities of life. You can't afford these kinds of high deductibles. And then you have the young invincibles, the young people, who say, I'm not going to spend $270 a month to buy a silver plan in one of the exchanges. Nothing's going to happen to me. I can spend $270 a month, which is average, you know, on making payments on a car, on my apartment, and all of these things. So there are fewer young, healthy people to fund the older population that uses a lot of health care. And so under Obamacare, with these medical loss ratios, where insurers, you know, can cover 80, they have to pay out 80% in claim and 20% to cover their admin costs, or if you're in the large group, 85-15, a lot of these insurers are now finding, well, 80-20 or 85-15, you know, my claims are, you know, 105% of what I'm bringing in premium. So this is a huge catastrophe. And, you know, as I said earlier at the beginning, this debate, the CNN debate at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley comes up on September 16th. I'm wondering, you know, is Docs for Patient Care getting in touch with any of the people that will be running the debate? Or, you know, Hugh Hewitt from Southern California was very much a big supporter of Romney, and he's going to be involved in the questioning. Are you getting your plan and your ideas out to the people so that maybe they can ask the appropriate questions of the candidates rather than leaving health care on the bottom of the burner?
That's an excellent question. You beat me to it, as you usually do, Sally, because I was going to bring that up next. But, you know, I think that the answer to your question is no. We have not gotten involved. We've not been – nobody's reached out to us. We actually have not reached out to anybody, but we should. But I think that anybody who's listening to this show should send a telegram or an email or make phone calls to CNN.
Do they still have is the Western Union man still around?
I don't know, but, you know, or a next day letter. But we need to get the public to demand that the moderators of this debate are going to address health care and hold the candidates' feet to the fire. And in the last segment, which will be coming up in a few minutes, I'm going to kind of do a rapid fire recap of all of the candidates. But, you know, if somebody were hiring Docs for Patient Care or came to us about, our candidate wants to take ownership, and this is going to be the last thing before the break, what would we tell them? And what I would tell them is that we need to give patients more choice. You know, the costs are so high because insurance companies have so many mandates because of the government. Get rid of that. Just let's go to catastrophic insurance and let people pay their own health care through either direct primary care and HSAs or some other way where they control the money that gets paid out. But healthcare is also so expensive because of consolidation of hospitals that Obamacare has allowed to happen, and that's the most expensive place where healthcare is delivered, as I've said over and over again. But we'll talk about the candidates in the wrap up on the last segment in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
You're back in the Doctor's Lounge, our final segment with our guest, Sally Pipes. I got a text from our executive director, Sally, who you know very well, Felicia Horton. Happy birthday to her today.
Happy birthday, Felicia.
And she wanted me to point out that Hugh Hewitt, one of the moderators of the debate, has our prescription, and I knew that. But we'll reach out to him and make sure that that he he's looking for questions. If you listen to his show, he's always asking his listeners what he should be asking, and we'll make sure that he is pushing healthcare. But in the solutions category, that if they came to me, what I would like to see that these candidates do is I'd like to see them work to eliminate the crushing regulations on the medical community that are preventing entrepreneurism and creativity in helping to deliver quality health care to millions and millions of Americans. You know, one of the things we talked about on our last show were certificate of need laws, which are basically restrictions on the ability to deliver health care because of crony capitalism. And that's really the problem. It's crony capitalism. And why I'm so discouraged by so much of what I see these days, because I'm not sure that it matters if you have a D or an R after your name. There's so much money and so much influence of lobbyists and special interests in healthcare in this $2 trillion annual economy that it's an uphill battle trying to get somebody to go against the money and do the right thing.
Well, and you mentioned certificates of need. I mean, this is a real blockage that does not allow, you know, new hospitals to come into being to create more competition among hospitals. As you mentioned earlier, hospitals are consolidating to deal with Obamacare, and 47% of graduating specialists are now joining hospitals. They're not going into private practice, and it's all the regulations, as you say, the mandates that that young docs say, well, I'm just going to go on salary, I'm going to join a hospital group. And I think this is really very depressing for the future of, you know, bringing about more competition in healthcare when everybody's joining before about, you know, joining hospitals and not going into private practice or small group practice.
Exactly. Well, you know, this is so difficult to unravel and explain, which is, I think, a big part of why nobody's talking about it, because it's like almost like a Rube Goldberg creation, and trying to undo it and explain all the different parts. Unfortunately, you get into the weeds very quickly because it's so complicated. So anyway, we got about 9 minutes before we are finished with the show today, and I'm going to ask you for a couple of sentences on each of these candidates and see what you have to say. We haven't talked about Ben Carson, Sally, so tell us about what you think about Ben Carson.
Funnily enough, Hal, I went to a luncheon on Tuesday with Dr. Ben Carson in San Francisco, and, you know, San Francisco being very liberal, This was hosted by the Commonwealth Club, and he was interviewed by an ABC anchor. And, you know, he was very impressive, and he gets health care. And I heard him speak at the white coat ceremony at Columbia University Medical School back in 2002 when my godson was being had been accepted into medicine, the medical school there. And Dr. Carson gave this rousing speech about the future of healthcare and why we needed to put doctors and patients in care, and how healthcare, you know, was sort of going down the drain. And all the Columbia Medical School Foundation directors were just like at the prayer breakfast, their mouths were hanging open thinking, this isn't what we thought we would get from our speaker. But he is really terrific. I think, you know, he gets healthcare reform. He can talk about it in a way because he can use examples of being a pediatric, a neurologist, surgeon. I think he loves HSAs. He loves consumer empowerment, transparency. Is he ready for prime time? Probably not this time. I would think in a Republican Congress with a Republican president, it would be fabulous if we could have someone like Dr. Ben Carson be the head of Health and Human Services. We really need somebody who understands healthcare to be there. So I think I'm a huge fan of his. But I don't think he's ready to be president, but he does understand healthcare and articulates it very clearly.
Jeb Bush,
I'm not a huge Jeb Bush fan. I think if we have Jeb Bush versus Hillary, people might be less inclined to vote for Jeb than they would be for Hillary if you look at the Clinton, sort of the monarchy of the Bushes and the Clintons. Jeb hasn't really come out. I mean, he said he would repeal Obamacare. Does he really mean that? I'm not really sure. I don't think he's been as direct in really putting forward free market solutions in a number of issues.
He's also been conflicted, I think. Some people have pointed out his conflicts as a board member and stockholder in Tenet Healthcare.
Healthcare, yes, exactly. And I think, and you know, Tenet was one of the first companies to, you know, support Obamacare.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so I think maybe that is why he, you know, is reluctant to say, but I think if he wants to get back in the race, he certainly, you know, has raised a lot of money, but, you know, he needs to articulate what his solutions are. And he, so far in healthcare, I haven't heard anything other than, oh, I would repeal Obamacare.
Okay. John Kasich.
John Kasich in Ohio, you know, a lot of people are talking about him as the VP. He's one of the newer entrants into the race. I'm sort of upset with him on taking the Medicaid expansion money, and I think if he did that, you know, would he really be someone who is devoted to repeal and replacement of Obamacare?
Well,
he may be one of the people, Obamacare light. Let's just tinker at the edges.
Well, he believes God is on his side.
Right, exactly. But I'm not overly enthusiastic about him as either the candidate or a VP.
Donald Trump.
Well, we've talked about Donald Trump before. He doesn't understand single payer. He didn't even know about how most large employers are self-insured under a government plan called ERISA. And probably all of his companies are self-insured under ERISA. He knows very little about healthcare. And anyone who can say that the Canadian single-payer healthcare is great and the one in Scotland is even better doesn't really know much about healthcare. And probably as a concierge doctor, he can go anywhere in the world himself to pay. So he has no idea what the plan to bring all Americans.
But he's bombastic. He's bombastic. He said, I'll fix healthcare and you'll love it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like, remember Obama ran on the slogan for hope and change?
Yes.
Well, you can have hope, and change can be good change, and change can be bad change. And so Mr. Trump, if he were the president, could fix it, all right. He could fix it and make it even worse than what we have under Obamacare.
Right. We've already talked about Carly Fiorina, so well, let's talk about a couple of people that haven't really gotten any mention yet, but who are still in the race. Chris Christie.
Chris Christie, I'm not really convinced that Chris Christie is a real free marketeer. I know when he was in the Reagan administration with Rudy Giuliani, he was considered, when he was in, I think, the Attorney General or Justice, he was considered one of the more liberal you know, members of that department administration, I just don't feel that he is totally committed to the kind of healthcare reform. I think he would be more wishy-washy and sort of pro Obamacare, like let's just fix the medical device tax and a few other things, and then we'll be on our way to, you know, better healthcare. So I don't know about what you think, Hal. I'm just not that optimistic about his real deep-seated feeling for change.
Well, you know, they said the same thing about Reagan in California running a blue state. So, you know, Chris Christie comes up with some of the same criticisms. But he hasn't taken many healthcare positions. His big positions so far have focused on entitlements and Medicare and Medicaid reform. And he wants to make Medicare and Medicaid into systems that would subsidize the people who need it and pretty much take it away from those who don't need it, which is, you know, something that some other people have discussed as well. But you know, he hasn't really taken a big stand. I think he's focusing on some of the other issues because it's just not – he's so low in the polls, I don't think that he feels healthcare is worth the time. I think that he's wrong. I think anybody who is a student of the last four election cycles can see that in 2010 and 2014, when healthcare was on the table, those were landslide GOP victories. And when they shied away from it in 2012, or when
14
or no, in 14 they that 2014 was landslide. 2014, 2010 were landslides. But in 2008, when all the oxygen got sucked out of the room with healthcare and Obama, and in 2012 when our GOP candidate refused to talk about healthcare, the GOP got slaughtered. So
right.
So the advice, what we've got I think a couple of minutes, 1 minute left. What's your advice to the GOP field in healthcare, Sally?
Well, I think they need to look at Scott Walker's plan and come up with. I think the problem is it's not that the GOP candidates or the people who are up for, whether it's Senator Ron Johnson or whomever, you know, it's not that they don't have a plan. There are too many Republican replacement plans out there, and they need to rally around one plan that really focuses on doctors and patients, empowering them and not the federal government.
Good.
So let's get together and start pushing one plan, because it's confusing to the American public, because healthcare, as you pointed out, Hal, is very complicated. It's like unraveling an onion, many layers, many tearful moments. Let's get the party, all the candidates to rally around. This is what we're going to do, so the American people can see what it means for them when they go into the voting booth.
And let's encourage the nominees to contact Sally Pipes at Pacific Research Institute and Docs for Patient Care Foundation and help them understand what the issues are so that we can fix this giant mess. Sally, it was great having you on and talking about politics. And as we get further into the political season, I'm going to have you back so that we can revisit this when the field gets pared down.
Narrowed down, right. Well, Hal, best to you and Docs for Patient Care. You should be getting all the support in the world, because it's about the future of healthcare and medicine in this country, and you need the support, and doctors should be supporting you so that they can continue in their profession and practice the kind of medicine that they were trained to practice.
And patients, too. Well, thank you again for joining us, Sally, and thank you for listening today to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.